Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Lesson, an eMarketer video podcast. This is the Friday show that is wishing you a happy brand new year. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. Welcome to 2024. In today's show, what to expect in 2024?
It's basically doing what Apple always does and like quietly work on things and come a little late to the game and do it better.
What will Google's AI search tool do to traffic?
And so if you're trying to discover something new versus if AI already knows exactly what you're doing, it's just going to surface the brands you already know.
Can a brand new self-checkout machine save self-checkout?
In terms of categories like apparel, it should be in every store. Absolutely.
Loyalty in the age of the zero consumer. Will everyone start creating digital clones of themselves? And we check in on how electric vehicle adoption is going. Join me for this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with one of our vice presidents of content who heads up the retail and e-commerce team based in New York. You know her as Susie David Canyon.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, Susie. Welcome to the show. Welcome to 2024. We're also joined by someone else on that retail and e-commerce desk based in New York as well, senior analyst Blake Drush.
Hey, Marcus. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, chap. And finally, we have our VP, Vice President of Everything Briefings. I don't know why I had to explain what VP stood for. She's based in New Jersey. It's Stephanie Taglianetti.
Thanks for clarifying and Happy New Year, mate.
I know. Happy New Year to you too. As I mentioned, the Weekly Listen is now a video podcast. So if you want to watch along, you can check this episode out on youtube.com/insiderintelligence and click the podcasts tab if you want to see what we look like and hang out with us that way. If not, you can just listen along all the places you normally listen to the show. What do we have in store for you? What to expect in 2024? We've got some fresh, brand new predictions that you can't find anywhere else. We'll start there. We then move to the game of the week. We haven't yet come up with a new game, so it's, of course, what's the point? Our contestants will go head-to-head to try to win the championship belt. And finally, dinner party data, everyone's favorite bit where we talk about some random trivia. Let's get on with it. We start, of course, with the story of the week. What to expect in 2024? Well, so anything's possible in 2024. Who will win the most medals at the Paris Olympics this summer? Probably America. Who will win the Men's Euro Football Cup in June this year? Probably not England. There's plenty to anticipate, though. In 2024, and Insider Intelligence has put together a ton of trends reports to help prepare you for the year ahead. How to prepare for cookies slowly disappearing this year, why short video will face a reckoning, which US company is most likely to be closest to a super app by the end of the year. All this and much, much more. But I've asked our three guests on today's show to come up with three brand new predictions that you can't find in any of our published research. So, gang, Susie, I'll start with you. What have you got for the listeners? What are you expecting in 2024?
First of all, I'm so excited that I'm going first. I think that bodes well for the weekly
listen game.
It doesn't.
It means nothing. It means nothing. There's no correlation.
There's 100% correlation. So, okay, I'm very excited about mine. Did you guys know that Apple is going to launch in the next 2 weeks, apparently the rumor goes, a new, I think it's like souped up in true Apple, you know, finessed technology, AR, VR sort of headset called Apple Vision Pro. And I think that is going to make the metaverse come back into all of the headlines. And AI will start to disappear as a must-have foundational IT tech tool versus something that's in the limelight. And so that is my prediction, that metaverse will make a comeback.
Okay, so the Vision Pro, Apple's VR,
AR? You know what it looks like? It is. It's already on their website. It's listed on their website. It says launching soon. It is like an immersive experience. It looks like ski goggles. Apparently, you can take a picture of yourself and then it'll impose your own face on the goggles. So it looks like you're looking at yourself. What is prohibitive is that it's $3,500.
I was going to say, well, how much does it cost?
Yeah, apparently it's going to be $3,500. And they're planning to go a la Nintendo with a very limited number release. So it's not going to be like an iPhone iPhone where they're going to expect lots of people buying in.
Right,
they're
right.
going to make it very, very exclusive. But what I think will happen is it's going to bring attention back to this whole idea of AR, VR, the metaverse, Web3. And because Facebook keeps putting out new goggles or new face things, glasses and whatever.
Form factors.
Yeah, which are significantly cheaper at around $500, but with better technology, right? So I think what's going to happen is all the people who hear about it and don't want to buy an Apple $3,500 one are going to start buying the Facebook one. So I think Facebook will accidentally sort of feel the halo effect of the Apple Pro Vision Pro. And I think it's just going to bring life back to Web3. And I'm going to still call it Web3 instead of Metaverse, because I think Facebook Meta changed the whole concept of Metaverse by changing its name.
So, but will this be a flash in the pan moment? Because we're still waiting for a killer app. We're still waiting for a better price tag, because even the current price tag is prohibiting a lot of people from investing in VR. One benefit it does have is people who are familiar with the Apple ecosystem may be more inclined to use something that is also going to be using a similar type of software, an iOS style software.
So I don't know that it's the Apple Vision Pro that's going to make it. That's the prediction part, that that's going to hit it big, as much as it is Apple is going to legitimize something that unfortunately Facebook took away from. And I think Roblox, although I guess we all agree AMC is not going to buy Roblox this year, or Roblox is not going to buy AMC, I still think there are a lot of retail brands doing different sort of activations with Roblox, which is another part of the metaverse, right? And so I think Apple putting their own sort of branding behind this concept of, you know, a third digital world aspect is going to help make it stronger. And if you think about it, AI sort of took over the like what's hot and new in technology for 23. I think Apple launching this product will bring the metaverse back into our common day conversations. So it's not that Apple is going to launch this thing that's going to become huge. It's just that Apple is going to help bring back the metaverse to reality.
Okay. One of Susie's other predictions, Roblox will buy AMC. Very specific, highly unlikely predictions. And have a metaverse
playground. No, that was the type of prediction, Steph. It was meant to be.
That was the type of prediction. Yeah. Not just Susie's predictions in particular.
It was on purpose supposed to be
extremely unlikely predictions from Susie. Let's move to Blake. What do you have for us?
Yeah, so at the end of last year, Amazon announced a date for when they're going to start introducing advertising to Prime Video. January 29th is now when they will start introducing ads to the platform unless subscribers pay an additional $2.99 fee. I think what really is going to happen here is it's going to introduce a way for shoppable media to expand beyond social media in a way that we haven't really seen before. And I think it actually is going to move the needle on consumer adoption of shoppable advertising, because Amazon has a shoppable video ad product that advertisers can already use on Freevee and Twitch and some of other associate publisher platforms. But what the introduction of ads to Prime Video is going to do is going to reach this massive audience of, I think it's 160 something million US Prime subscribers. And it's going to combine its retail media network, first party consumer data with premium video content, and then that e-commerce integration, which is really the third component here. So in order to watch Prime Video, you have to be logged into Amazon, which means you're a Prime subscriber, which means that your credit card and all your personal information and all of your data is already built into the video platform, right? So this is going to introduce a potential new way for consumers to engage with shoppable media that is actually much more fluid than some of the other experimentation that we've seen in the space outside of social media. So even if, you know, there's, let's say, you know, 4 to 5% of Prime Video viewers end up adding something to their cart directly from a Prime Video ad, that's going to amount to, you know, a pretty big number.
Susie, any thoughts here on the retail angle?
I agree. The big question mark, which I think Amazon has sort of, we give them a lot of leeway for, is the consumer experience. And will it be an easy, seamless one, or will it interrupt the show? And then you don't, you know, if you have a bad experience, will you try it again? I think we give Amazon a lot of sort of permission to have a bad user experience. And so this might be the right platform to start that with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, just anecdotally, I saw one of these ads a couple of months ago on Freevee, and it was for a product that I had no interest in buying, but I wanted to try it out. So I just, you literally press the button on your, I have the Amazon Fire TV, and it added it right to my Amazon cart. I didn't end up completing the purchase, but it actually, it is pretty seamless. And that's why I think I'm, I'm so bullish on it.
Nice. Very nice. Stephanie, close this out.
Coming back to Apple, I think we'll see Siri on steroids in iPhone 16. Apple has been kind of quietly working on its Gen AI developments. A recent study came out like a week ago about how Apple is working on Gen AI that could run directly on the iPhone. And so while Apple has been critiqued for not jumping all in on Gen AI as quickly as some of its tech competitors, it's basically doing what Apple always does and like quietly work on things and come a little late to the game and do it better, because it's challenging a lot of the privacy concerns that folks have with Gen AI tools by allowing its quote unquote Apple GPT to run directly on iPhone. And I think what we're going to see with its event in the fall is that Siri is just going to get a whole lot better and become sort of its killer app, if you will. Not necessarily a killer app on the whole, but for Apple, a killer app for sure.
Mm-hmm. So Siri, it's the second most in terms of assistance, a smartphone assistance in the US. 90 million for Google Assistant. Then you've got Apple at about 84 million. So just behind. And then Amazon Alexa users a couple of million behind that. So already a ton of people using Siri. How do you see people changing how they interact with it?
Not getting as frustrated with its recommendations and accessibility features, because it'll get a whole lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks. Very nice. Three brand new predictions for you. Like I said, you can't find any of our research, but we do have tons and tons of trends reports. We'll be doing tons of trends and predictions episodes throughout the month of January. So stay tuned for those. Or if you want the written version of our content, you can head to insiderintelligence.com. Let's move to the game of the week, folks. Today's game, What's the Point? I read out four stories and Susie, Blake and Stephanie tell us what they think is the main takeaway of the story. Okay answers get 1 point, good answers get 2. And answers that give you the same feeling as climbing out of the car and stretching after a long road trip.
Yep.
Yep. You know.
You're getting way answers better at these, Marcus, I gotta say.
Okay. Didn't feel like a compliment. You're maintaining a certain level of perfection, Marcus, with these.
Yeah.
Is what we're looking for. Okay. Do you want to say something like that and we can cut it in?
Well, no.
Okay, fine.
Because I don't like to lie to our listeners, sorry.
Well, they won't know. It'll make me feel really good. Answers that leave you with that feeling, they get you 3 points. You get 20 seconds to answer before you hear this noise. People who run long are the worst people. Most people wins. Gets the last word. Let's play.
Cool.
We start with Susie for round one. News publishers see Google's AI search tool as a traffic-destroying nightmare. About 40% of the Atlantic's traffic comes from Google searches. The Wall Street Journal citing an internal report from the magazine claiming that AI gives users an answer to their question about 75% of the time. So no need to click through to anything. And as the journal explains, what was once a hypothetical threat is now a very real one, because since May, Google has been testing an AI product called Search Generative Experience on a group of about 10 million folks with the intention to bring it into the heart of its core search engine. But Susie, will Google's AI search tool be a traffic-destroying nightmare?
So in the lens of publications, I don't think so, in that the publications are striking deals with all the different AI owners, platforms, to ensure that they're getting some sort of revenue sharing model, that they are sending sources and links so that people can go to the actual website. That's probably going to generate some different kind of traffic, add some legitimization to your content because it's being plucked by AI. Where I do think, from a completely different perspective, for retailers, I do think it might destroy traffic in that, AI is only as good, from what I understand, as the data that it has. And so if you're trying to discover something new, when you go into Google and you just type in like new jeans, all kinds of things that'll pop up that might have nothing to do with what you were expecting. And so you'll discover it, versus if AI already knows exactly what you're doing, it's just going to surface the brands you already know or the brands that are most bought, the chances are you already know. And so I think if you're a small brand without a lot of clout, AI is going to really destroy you. from a search perspective.
Not literally.
Correct.
Kill you. Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Absolutely.
Blake.
I think, you know, really, it does have the capability to really harm publishers in the sense that there are users who are going to search engines for specific answers to questions, and they're not being directed towards, you know, media publishers to get answers to these questions. But that's, you know, potentially detrimental to a lot of, you know, publishers' business. But I think it really is going to enforce them to invest in things like long form pieces and engaging readers in a way that they're not just answering their questions and getting redirected via Google. But at the same time, it could really harm the sort of fragile revenue models that it has used to sustain itself in the digital era so far. So definitely a lot of transformation.
Yeah. Stephanie.
I think my colleagues have said a lot that I agree with. I think that user behavior is not going to change when it comes down to using Google search. So I think if you're typing a string and need a quick answer to a question and you're getting enough of a result without needing to go over to a publisher site, then absolutely, it's definitely a site traffic nightmare. Mm-hmm.
Average traffic loss. Google is saying its AI products is far from set, but publishers estimate they will lose between 20 to 40% of their Google-generated traffic if anything resembling recent iterations rolls out widely. Google said it is giving priority to sending traffic to publishers. We'll see. Round two. We start with Blake, a new self-checkout machine. Clothing retailer Uniqlo has invented a self-checkout machine that does everything for customers except pay the bill. An Inc. article from Bruce Crumley notes that customers just drop their items into a rectangular bin, and then RFID tags, inside of price tags, are instantly scanned, and the machine lists the goods and prices on a screen, telling folks when to pay and using a card reader below the display. But Blake, can this new self-checkout machine save self-checkout?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's personally used that at the Uniqlo store on Fifth Avenue, it really did amaze me. And I'm not someone who's easily wowed by technology, and it really is convenient.
Or anything, so.
For that matter. The thing that I am going to be interested to find out is around grocery, because I think a lot of what really annoys people about self-checkout on grocery is having to basically input and weigh the produce and the non-packaged goods. And I'm not sure if this technology is going to be able to solve for that. But in terms of categories like apparel, it should be in every store. Absolutely. Like, it's a great way to get people into the store and coming back.
Someone who's not easily impressed. You do watch golf, Blake.
Yes. It's, do you know?
Riveting.
Have you seen how small that hole is? It's
impressive. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to play, but I don't need to watch it. Stephanie.
Totally aligned with Blake on the grocery front. It's like so much more of a nuisance than a help right now. And I've never been more frustrated / embarrassed in my life than like ringing up lemons for the third failed time and having to call the clerk over to like give me the assist again. So hopefully it does improve that experience, because it really is terrible right now.
Susie.
So outside of Steph's story, I would have actually said, how many people truly have that much of a difficult time with self-checkout? Really, honestly.
Stephanie.
Maybe in groceries, but even then, I mean, I just went to a Walmart in Canada where there's like 10 people helping you. So it's like not even really self-checkout. It's like assisted checkout.
But it's lineup. Like shame checkout at that point.
I don't know. I think sometimes we internalize things we don't need to, like not always winning on Weekly Listen. That's okay.
Not ever winning.
Hey,
ever.
What I will tell you about this, though, me too. I tried it last year during NRF time. Everybody was talking about it. It is very easy to use. What I think is going to be hard is it's very expensive, right? That means that all clothing, all sort of items are going to need that RFID tag. So that means that if you're a multi, Uniqlo sells its own thing, so it's different. But if you're like a department store or a multi-branded store, you have to make sure that all your vendor partners are going to put the RFID tags on your things. Otherwise, your box is useless. And from a logistics perspective, they take up a lot of room and it's expensive, right? So I think the cost to make this happen is probably much greater than the friction that consumers are feeling towards checking out.
There were some numbers, though, in this Inc. piece, which were quite interesting. So it was saying about 60% of shoppers have used self-checkout machines, about just under half, so they basically use them all the time. 90% wanted stations to be more intelligent, and 67% complaining about having been inconvenienced by system failures. And Blake, I've used one too, and they are remarkable. It's so good, you think that you're stealing. You think that you must have done something wrong because there's no way you've paid that quickly. And there were some numbers, the Wall Street Journal article, the whole process takes about 30 seconds, and it really did become so popular with shoppers that between 70 to 90% of them use it over staff registers. It really is quite remarkable. We'll see if it can help though, because a lot of people are even admitting to stealing on one survey from self-checkout, and retailers kind of getting fed up. So a lot of them have kind of pulled back from it, but maybe this can reinvigorate some of that interest in the technology. Let's move to round three. Halfway mark. Susie and Blake tied on four. Stephanie just behind with three. We start with Stephanie for round three. Loyalty in the age of the zero consumer. Eva Keese of Adweek points out that consumer expectations for loyalty programs are rising. Nearly 40% expect to be rewarded for sticking with a brand, up from 17% in 2020, according to a study from Hall & Partners. And David Limmer of Retail Wire talks about the concept of the zero consumer. Shoppers characterized by zero patience, zero boundaries, and zero loyalty, who are challenging traditional definitions of customer loyalty. But Stephanie, how are companies rethinking customer loyalty in the age of the zero consumer?
I mean, healthcare companies in particular are acknowledging that they need a better online presence and that their reviews matter, and also that they need to basically be available at a whim because customers are going to someone that's available tomorrow versus someone that they saw a month ago. So that's one reaction I'm seeing in health, at least. But this article didn't really say much new about how consumers are disloyal.
Susie.
Well, I actually was going to say the same thing, in that this is not, it's a new word. I've never heard zero, or new idea, sort of buzzword catchphrase, zero consumer. I'd never heard of that before. It's not even intuitive. The concept is not new, right? Consumers need to make it an easy sort of transaction where you show them value. And the only solution really to have a loyal customer is to have something unique, right? If you don't have unique either experience or product, they're going to comp shop and go somewhere else if the price is better somewhere else. And so if you're a multi-branded retailer, it means maybe you have some loss leader type products where you bring people in at a lower value point and then you offer other unique things. I think different retailers will have to think about it in a different way. But at the end of the day, if you don't serve your consumer in the way they want to be served and you don't understand what value means to them, you're going to lose.
Blake.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just new spin on an old story. Consumers are getting smarter. They are aware of their options. This has been the case for a really long time. I don't think it's inherent that everyone has a loyalty problem. I mean, Amazon doesn't have a loyalty problem. Apple doesn't. Nike doesn't. The good brands that do everything right and they're constantly evolving to meet the customers are doing just fine. Mm. So yes, I think that there's a heightened awareness among consumers and there's more competition than ever, but that's been the case for a long time.
Very nice, folks. We head into double points round four, and Susie and Blake still tied just ahead of Stephanie, six apiece for them, Stephanie on five. We start with Susie for round four. Creating digital clones of yourself. As Mary Lou Costa of the BBC writes, property expert Rob Dix now has a digital AI chatbot clone of himself on his website that can quickly answer questions as if it is him talking. This is because he says he gets far more questions than he can individually answer. Mr. Dix created the clone by feeding it content from his books and also content from him and his partner's Sunday Times column and property podcast. But Susie, will more and more people start making digital copies of themselves?
This is the most absurd headline I have ever read, right?
It's you don't like, want two of me?
Just ridiculous. It's two basically Marcuses. Talking about a chat bot that's smart, right? You give it the information that you've created so that it can reply in the way you would create. There is nothing innovative about that now that we're talking about chatbots and ChatGPT and Gen AI and all that jazz. Did you guys see I only saw it on Instagram, which is very sad that I'm admitting to a news source for me is Instagram. But did you guys see how celebrity chatbots were made and how that was very cool for a while? But the most important part is the technology needs to work and that the cool factor will wear off. And if the chatbot isn't answering the questions that you're asking, then people are going to move on.
Blake.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, works, will work up into a point where the chatback contradicts something that the person actually agrees with, and then it becomes a big problem. But I actually saw a similar example of this in the grocery world. It's a smaller retailer, the Fresh Market and Firework, which is like a well-known live streaming business. They have a new AI product where they'll have a live stream, and then after the live stream goes off the air, you can still ask the person doing the live stream questions, and they'll just give you artificially generated answers. People are experimenting with all types of different use cases for, you know, the similar type of a more advanced chatbot. But I agree with Susie, it's like, it doesn't seem like it's gonna like replace the appeal of actually speaking with someone in this context.
Stephanie.
Yeah, again, like nothing really new here except for that the chatbots are mirroring an actual person, not an invented one. So real people are held accountable to what the tech is saying to other real people. And that's the only thing I see here as being potentially problematic. And immediately it made me think of the show Severance, where people have a version of themselves that do work and then have a happier version of themselves that do not do work. If anyone's seen that.
I haven't. We're just full transparency, though, we're the podcast team, we're currently working on digital clones of all of you guys. So you can't say no to being on the show anymore.
I'm for
that.
Oh,
perfect.
Oh my God, we're going to get jobbed out.
I could see, I mean, are there any use cases? But I thought it was interesting that, you know, your digital version can speak in over 120 different languages. I thought that's pretty cool because a lot of content isn't translated into that many languages and or accessible for that many people. And so if you're an author putting out a book, you're doing a book reading, to be able to do that book reading and answer basic questions about the book in, you know, over 100 places or whatever could be pretty cool. Maybe if you're a movie screening, speaking to the director or a digital version of the director. There's a couple of use cases in here. It says another 150 people have also created AI clones of themselves through a UK company called Coachvox AI, including chief executives, an astrologer, a nutritionist, a fitness coach, and even a marriage counselor as well. So maybe there are some niche cases in here. Probably not mass market anytime soon. But very good game, folks. Count scores. And I can reveal that Blake is this week's winner of the game of the week. Congratulations.
It's Blake.
To Blake. 12 points, Susie 10, Stephanie 9.
10.
Yeah, just the 10. You should be happy with 10. Blake, congratulations.
Thank you.
You are the first winner of the game of the week for 2024. You take the belt from Paul Werner, who had it over the holiday period. And you, of course, get the last word.
I just want to wish all of our listeners, happy new year. I hope everybody feels rejuvenated and refreshed to tackle the year ahead. And a thanks to Marcus and the rest of the folks behind the scenes who do a great job, you know, day in, day out, keeping this thing running. So, you know, bless you all.
Oh my God. This was exactly what Paul Werner said, guys. Come on.
That's actually not true. It's not, I'm not just copying Paul. It's 2024. I've turned
cloning.
Over a new leaf.
No,
and
you're
this
digitally
is just, this is the way I am now.
You digitally cloned Paul Werner in your speech.
I don't know if I'm not sure how to feel about this version.
Just a pleasant, nice guy.
Victoria, you were taken aback by this as I am. I'm in shock. I've literally got no words. Thanks, Blake. I'm blown away.
Marcus.
I'm just waiting at any moment for you to be like,
that's
Marcus.
A great jacket, by the way. Is that new?
Oh, stop it.
Thanks for noticing. It is new.
Stop
nice.
It. Cut this
I don't know
down.
Why I'm wearing it indoors, but that's just how England treats you sometimes. Let's move to the final segment of the show. It's, of course, Dinner Party Data. This part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing we've learned this week. Let's start with Blake.
So this is fresh data from YouGov about Americans' reading habits over the last year.
Oh, God.
They...
How bleak is it?
They poll... It's pretty bleak, as you might have guessed. So 46% of U.S. adults read
I've forgotten how
no
to read.
Books oh. in 2023. 26% read between 1 and 5 books. And 11% read more than 20 books. Physical
wow.
books were actually still the most popular way of reading, 42%. said that they had read a physical book compared to 21% who read a digital book and 19% who listened to an audio book. But the thing that I found interesting is that the most avid readers prefer digital books over physical books. So the avid readers, which I guess makes sense, right? I mean, you're not going to really invest in like a Kindle unless you're serious about reading. But I just found that to be interesting because I associate like serious readers with people who still read physical books, which actually, I guess now that I read it out, like it's 46% reading no books is alarming, but the people who do read seem to still be reading a fair amount. So I think it's just sort of that gap.
I was expecting, I thought you were going to say 97% of Americans have never heard of a book.
Come on. I think
we're better, we're more, it's better than that. So that's positive. They're pretty positive numbers, actually. I was expecting.
Yeah, it's actually not that bad.
You guys just got a dig there.
No.
You just got an American dig.
It'd be higher in England. That's right, English people. I'm looking at you and Canada.
All right, back it up. Next time.
Canadians read.
Canadians read.
We have newspapers.
Susie, you're up.
Okay, so today, January 5th, is Armenian Christmas Eve. It is also tomorrow will be Epiphany and Three Kings Day, and it's the end of the 12 days of Christmas. And in France, they have these things called galette des rois, where they hide a coin or a toy in this, like, flat pancake looking cake thing, and you cut it into the number of pieces that are around the table, and then whoever gets the coin or the toy has luck for the year. So my dinner party data is in a recent-ish study.
Recent-ish.
What percentage of people believe in some sort of luck?
Time frame is that?
68%. 68% of Americans believe in some sort of luck. Of the people polled, 31% of people who do not believe in luck still follow some sort of superstitions, which I think is kind of funny. And when you think about the different types of luck, sort of activities and events, 1 in 2 believe in beginner's luck. 44% of people pick up a penny. Do you know how many percent of people cross their fingers to indicate good luck?
Most.
37%, which is kind of a little bit lower than I thought, right? Mm. Nearly 30% of people, I'm one of these, think that if a ladybug lands on you, it's for good luck. And
why?
I'm also one of these. Do you guys know about the if you can't walk under a ladder,
yes,
bad luck?
Yeah.
1 in 4 believe in that and don't walk. I'm one of those. If you ever see me in New York, like crossing the street in a weird spot, it's because there was a ladder. Anyways, it's a new year. I'm not going to say a new you because I think everybody should just be building on themselves. And, you know, everybody hopefully will be lucky in any parts and all parts of their life this year.
So
how do we go from Armenian Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, let me tell you, January 6th is Armenian Christmas.
Okay.
And January 6th is also many other sort of symbolic things and traditions, of which one of them is in France. It's the kings, you know, when the three kings came and presented gifts, and it's when Jesus like was presented to the world. So
right. One
of the things that they do in France is
presented
they have these galettes de rois.
It's not Simba.
Yeah. They have these little cakes where there's like this toy in it that represents luck for the year. So I just was curious about how people feel about luck.
Huh. Beginner's luck is just something that people say to themselves when they get beat by someone who they just taught the game to.
Exactly.
Well, 58% of people believe in that is a thing, beginner's luck. Ugh. The truth is that, you know what, actually, as I was reading more about luck, it's a huge psychological phenomenon in terms of like, if you believe in luck, then apparently there are 4 things you do. If you believe in luck, then you look for opportunities, you take risks, you do all these things because you believe in luck, versus the exact opposite could be true. If you believe in fate and luck, you might not do things that you should be doing because you're worried about it. So it's a very psychological thing, luck.
Interesting. The thing with beginner's luck, though, going back to it for a sec, is that no one, I was listening to what you said, kind of, is that no one says it about themselves. No one like wins the first time around and goes, it's just beginner's luck. You always say about someone else. So when someone says about you, you're like,
you do when you're hustling someone.
Or if you're Canadian.
Oh, I got Well, Doc.
Marcus, did you have like a recent experience? Was this triggering to you, Susie's stats? It sounds
no,
like
no, I'm just
it.
Saying. Just,
I feel
just,
like Marcus like got really beaten harping in like a one-on-one basketball match with like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
And he's just really bitter.
Blake is back.
He traveled, okay? He traveled. Why play if you're not going to abide by the rules? Lucky shot. Who's left? Stephanie.
I see Susie and I still have our Christmas trees up. What do you think is like a appropriate time to leave up Christmas decor after
not
Christmas?
Now.
Jan 8th.
January 8th? Why 8th? Yeah.
Because it's after Armenian Christmas.
Okay. No one has opinions on it.
I have an opinion. They should be taken down already. Okay? Especially if they're in your background.
Yeah. But not if you're Armenian or any Orthodox.
Well, honestly, this tree is acting as a nightlight for my new kittens who live in my office now.
That sounds like an excuse. Susie, what I really want is just if you just push it, over a bit.
Just topple it.
No. Other way.
To the rest
there
of
you go.
Hey.
Well,
Lance is going to be furious.
Since Susie and
hey,
I are
Google,
still...
Google, turn the light on.
Don't bother Google. We haven't got time for it. Go on,
Susie,
Stephanie.
Oh, so delayed. Oh. Well, I
thank you.
I was really prepared for this dinner party data and just frantically typed into Google random things about Christmas.
Good.
So
thanks for taking it seriously.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Was it AI Google or was it regular Google?
It was regular. It's pedestrian regular. Google. Did you know that there's actually over 630 kinds of species of Christmas trees? I thought that was absurdly high.
Species?
Yes, species.
Okay. All right. 630 million?
630 million would be outrageous.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what pedestrian Google will do to you, though. Can't trust it.
But I also learned that Jingle Bells holds the Guinness record for being the first song ever played in outer space.
Wow.
The crew of NASA's Gemini 6A spaceflight made history when they played Jingle Bells on December 16th, 1965. There's also a scientist.
Is that what you're going for, though?
What? You know, for Guinness, first, when you're in NASA, is that the record you
play?
When
you're in NASA, well, no, that's the record. First song you play. If you're up to spec, you've got to play. You've got to play Dancing in the Moonlight, Top Loader. A classic.
That song didn't come out until the 70s.
This was 1965, Marcus.
No, I'm just saying. It was just a more fitting choice.
I have two more.
40 years later.
Two more facts. There's a scientific theory by U.S. scientists who worked out that if Santa Claus was real and had to visit all the homes of children, he'd have to visit 822 houses at 650 miles a second in order to reach all of the homes and deliver all the presents.
Wow. One more time?
He'd have to visit, logistically, 822 houses at 650 miles a second to get it all done.
Plausible. This is a kid's show. Stephanie, I hope you know. And that is possible, children. That is possible.
Here's a juicy one.
Okay.
2 weeks before Christmas is the most popular time for couples to break up.
Oh.
And then
2 weeks before Christmas.
2 weeks before. And then Christmas Day itself is the least popular day for couples to break up.
I should hope so.
Yeah. There you go.
2 weeks before.
I'm surprised that's more popular than before Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Before Valentine's Day?
Yeah, before. Like, this way you don't have to go through with it with that person that you're not really into.
Jesus.
Or buy a gift.
Or buy a gift.
All right.
Take them out to dinner.
Okay.
Buy them roses.
Do something nice.
Get them chocolate.
We must move on. This has gotten real dark. Very nice.
There's all right, nothing I got one dark for... about Valentine's Day. We love Valentine's
Day. No, about
Day.
You guys saying, giving reasons why you should break up with someone ahead of time to save money and time. All right, got one for you real quick. Electric vehicle facts. I've got 3.5 for you. One.
A half.
Well, four. Well, four is four. It's not really a fact. It's
Are you just going to stop saying it midway?
It's a piece of news. It's a piece of news. So three facts and a piece of news about electric vehicles. One, the average range for EVs, electric vehicles, is significantly higher. As recent as 2021, the average range of an EV was just 220 miles, 350 kilometers, for our friends who aren't in America. As well short of gas cars, the average range was over 400 miles, 660 kilometers. But today, there are multiple EVs that can offer 300 to 400 miles per charge. The Lucid Air offers over 500 miles. It's expensive, though. It's $140,000. Next one. Number two. EV sales are on the rise. EVs now represent 8% of new auto sales in the US.
Wow.
Americans bought a record 1.5 million of them in 2023, according to Bloomberg NEF. About the same number sold that they sold in the previous 5 years total they sold last year. Most young people, 18 to 34 year olds, will consider buying or leasing one next versus one in five older folks, according to YouGov. And then number three, top reasons to get an EV. What do we think?
Save money on gas.
You guys, all about saving money.
But you know, the statistic is interesting about the increase, but how many more models are available? Like, I think it's just much more available now and they're all cheaper and there's the tax credit. No,
yeah,
is it that people are just more interested in those cars, or there's just so many more options that are more affordable?
Certainly more options. Yep. More affordable and good for the environment is what we were looking for. That's the number one reason to get an EV.
How many of you guys have a car?
46%.
I do.
Is it an EV?
I wanted an EV, but when I went to the dealership, they said I'd have to wait 6 months to get the EV model. Oh, so I decided not to do that.
Oh, interesting.
Because the inventory was all out of whack over the summer.
Well, reasons to not get it. Too expensive, 61%. Can't go as far, 36%. Lack of charging stations, 32%. But other reasons to get one: good for the environment, then saves money, then you can charge it at home, which is cool. However, that leads nicely into the piece of news. You might not have to charge at home because Detroit is now home to America's first stretch of road that can wirelessly charge an EV, whether it's parked or moving.
Wow. That's cool.
When an EV equipped with an approved receiver nears the in-road charging segment, the road transfers electricity wirelessly through a magnetic field.
Wow. It's not terrifying.
Oh, like that you're going to get electrocuted?
Yeah.
Oh, you can walk on it and stuff. That's fine.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. You don't have to. Yeah.
That's weird. Cool. The other thing about saving money is, do you think you actually save money or your electricity bill is just three times more if you're charging it at home?
Oh, at home? Yeah, good point. I once read it was about a tenth of the cost of petrol.
Oh.
So as long as it's, you know, not then the other 90 cents to charge at home versus charging it elsewhere. I imagine it wouldn't be too
much. You have to pay if you're charging it somewhere else?
I would imagine you have to pay the little charger.
The little charger.
Like at the grocery store? Yeah.
They're at grocery stores?
Yeah. My Stop and Shop has several.
Oh.
That's very cool. New Jersey.
No one uses them.
Please don't be surprised by that. Susie, New Jersey. Wow.
What the hell?
Ahead of its time. That's what we've got time for today's episode. Thank you so much to my guests for being on the first episode of the 2024 Weekly Listen.
Wow.
Thank you to Stephanie.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you to Susie.
Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Thank you to Blake.
Thanks, Marcus. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, sir. This week's winner of the game of the week. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stu, who runs the team, Sophie, who does our social media, and Lance, who helps us out with the video version of this podcast. Thanks, of course, to everyone for listening. We'll hopefully see you guys on Monday for the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer Podcast. Happy weekends.